The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salner & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salner & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition. We're on today's show. We're going to go over some things to know about year-of-death RMDs. So this is a topic idea from Jim. I'm not sure if he has a particular motivation for this topic today. I'm sure he'll share that with us, but it is a topic that can be quite confusing for people, and certainly something, just another one of those challenges that when a loved one passes away, you might need to worry about what's been going on recently or what's expected to happen in their qualified retirement accounts. But yeah, Jim, is there any particular reason for the RMD topic today?
We needed one and we were running out of time.
Okay.
No.
As good as anything.
As I attend the Ed Slot program, you know, a couple of months ago I attended the Ed Slot program online version because of COVID. I will write down items that I think will be good EDU and good topics for us to discuss on the show. So we decided to record today, folks. This is a Thursday. Normally it's a Friday, but I am in the office today. I will not be in the office on Friday. I'll be working from home on Friday. And I said to Chris, while I'm here, if you want to record upstairs in the office, we can certainly do that. And that's what we decided to do. So we needed a topic, and I pulled this one out from the Ed Slot group. I thought it's a good topic because a lot of people don't know what to do in the year of death when an IRA is inherited, and that's what we're going to cover today.
Perfect. Do we have a like a hypothetical story here or just a bit of a bullet point list of topics to be considered?
Not a story. It's definitely different scenarios, trying to explain the rules, at least the year of death rules, when you inherit an IRA. It causes a lot of confusion. I thought it would make a good topic for the EDU show, and hopefully our listeners will agree. And we should begin, Chris, maybe by starting to explain who has to take a year of death RMD. Well, when is a year of death required minimum distribution actually due? And again, what we're talking about here, folks, is the required minimum distribution that must be taken in the year that the IRA owner dies. That's a year of death RMD. It is not the required minimum distribution that a beneficiary needs to take because they inherited an IRA. It is the required minimum distribution you need to take because the IRA account owner passed away and he or she passed away after their required beginning date. This is what's key. That's called the year of death RMD. Now remember, under the Secure Act, folks, that passed, the Secure Act you don't hear much about anymore, Chris, that took effect in January because the CARES Act and all the COVID stuff kind of pushed it down to the wayside. But under the Secure Act, we increased required minimum distribution beginning age until 72.
Right.
And we abolished the stretch IRA where there are no required minimum distributions any longer, and you must close for an inherited IRA, and you must close an inherited IRA as a beneficiary within 10 years of inheriting it. Now, there are exemptions to that that we've talked about on previous podcasts. We're not getting into that today. What we're going to talk about instead today is what happens not over the 10 years following the period of time when a non-spouse beneficiary inherits an IRA, but what happens in the year of death when an IRA is inherited. That's what we're going to talk about. So who is, first of all, Chris, subject to the year of death RMD? Or when, better way of saying it, rather than who is subject, when is a year of death RMD even an issue?
Only if the original account owner of that retirement account, the IRA that we're talking about here, has reached their required beginning date. If they haven't lived until their required beginning date, the RMD requirements, that's kind of redundant because the R in RMD means required, but the RMDs have not yet officially started until someone has lived to their required beginning date. And that required beginning date, of course, it's one easy for me to remember. April 1st of the year following the year that you turn RMD age, which in this case now after the SECURE Act is 72. So April 1st of the year following the year you turn 72, you must begin, you can delay no longer, you must take your required minimum distribution for the first year you are required to do so. If you pass away, if the account holder passes away before that date, then they get it's a tough free pass, if you will. They had to pass away to avoid this. But the person who originally owned the account is not required to take a required minimum distribution. But once you pass that magical point, that required beginning date point, the deceased must either take their RMD or someone must take it on their behalf if they are required to take an RMD.
Perfect. So one of the first things to remember, folks, there is no year of death required minimum distribution if the IRA account owner passes away before their required beginning date, April 1st of the year following the year they turn 72. Now, that 72 age is new. Used to be 70 and a half, but beginning January 1st of this year, because of the SECURE Act, it became age 72. So if you inherited an IRA from your uncle, and your uncle passed away at age 70, you would not have to take a year of death RMD as the beneficiary. But if your uncle passed away and he was 73, you might have to take a year of death RMD. And why did I say might? When would you not have to take a year of death RMD, Chris, if the man passed away or the IRA owner passed away after their required beginning date, so after April 1st of the year following the year they turned 72, so in this example, he passed away at 73. Why did I say might instead of will?
Well, one reason is that he already took the RMD.
Exactly. If the IRA owner already took their year of death RMD, in other words, they didn't know they were going to die that year, and they took their RMD, the beneficiary does not have to take the year of death RMD. And remember, under the new SECURE Act, you do not have to take any RMDs. Under the 10-year payout rule for non-spouse beneficiaries, so you could actually let that IRA sit there for the entire year of death, Chris, if he already took it, and for nearly 10 full years after. It's just that the only RMD there technically is one, and that is the entire account balance remaining before December 31st of 10 years following the year of death. You have to fully close an IRA now within 10 years if you're a non-spouse beneficiary. Spousal beneficiaries get their own rules. We'll talk about them another time. But a non-spouse beneficiary has to fully close it within 10 years unless they are an eligible designated beneficiary. We won't get too deep into that either here. We don't want to really talk about the exemptions here. We're trying to talk about the people who will be subject to a year of death RMD. So, who has to pay the taxes on the year of death RMD? We already said it's only due if the IRA owner passed away after April 1st of the year following the year they turned 70 and a half.
72.
Excuse me, 72. See, I'm so used,
so
to,
used
saying,
to saying that.
70
yeah.
and a half, because that's what the rule used to be. It's only applicable if someone passes away after their required beginning date. If you pass away before that, there is no year of death RMD. But if a year of death RMD might apply, the next thing you have to do is go make sure it was never taken yet. How are you going to do that? You simply call the custodian. If you're the beneficiary of the account or the executor of the estate, the custodian will give you that information. Did the owner, before he or she passed away, take the required minimum distribution or not? If the custodian says no, and the person died after their required beginning date, after April 1st of the year following the year they turned 72, then you know, okay, it's got to be taken. And the beneficiary has no ifs, ands, and buts about it. They have to take it. But Chris, who pays the taxes? Because after all, this is the decedent's required minimum distribution. Right. It is not technically the beneficiaries. Remember, the beneficiary, the non-spouse beneficiary under the new rules, doesn't have any RMDs until year 10 after death. That's by December 31st of year 10, the entire IRA has to be closed and liquidated. Yet, the beneficiary, non-spouse beneficiary, may be forced to take this year of death RMD. Mm-hmm. Well, the year of death RMD is the decedent's. And the reason it is, remember we just said, if the decedent took the year of death RMD, his or hers, then you don't have to take it. So, Chris, if it is the decedent's, and it's being paid, though, to the beneficiary, who actually pays the taxes? The decedent's estate? Does the IRA custodian withdraw the taxes from the RMD and send it to the IRS on behalf of the decedent's estate? Because after all, it was the decedent's. Mm-hmm. Or does the beneficiary have to pay taxes on it, even though it's not theirs? They don't have any. Non-spouse beneficiaries who are non-eligible designated beneficiaries, which will be the vast majority of people inheriting IRAs, they don't have to take anything out, Chris, till year 10. So who is paying the taxes?
The interesting part for a lot of people who haven't heard this rule before is that even though the, and we started this story as an uncle, right, passed away, the uncle and may very well, there may very well need to be an income tax return filed in the year of death for the uncle. That's usually handled by the executor of the estate. But the income that was supposed to go to the uncle who is now deceased, and I say the income because that is what distributions from an IRA represent, is income, recognized income, that money instead gets sent to the beneficiary, and the beneficiary must report it as their own income in that year, not on the income tax return of the deceased uncle, on the income tax return of the beneficiary who received the money. So this is a strange one where it's actually the RMD of the uncle, technically, but being forced to out of the account because it hadn't been taken prior to the uncle's passing. and the beneficiary gets it and must pay tax on it at their own rates based on their own tax return where that distribution will be recorded.
Exactly. And because of that, because it is actually the deceased, in our example, uncle's RMD. So the uncle in my example passed away at 73. So it was his RMD. Remember, if he passed away at 63, there is no year of death RMD.
Right.
But if you pass away after April 1st of the year following the year you turn 72, there will be a year of death RMD. And in our example, the uncle never took it. The uncle had not taken his RMD yet. So now the beneficiary must take it. And it is based on as if the uncle was still alive. Has nothing to do with the age of the beneficiary. Right. Has nothing to do with the single life table that one used to go to and currently would still go to if they are an eligible designated beneficiary. I think we talked about that before.
Not too long ago, we went through that whole list of
eligible designated. So we won't rehash that. That's on another podcast. We're talking about a very narrow niche here right now. Year of death RMDs. That's what we're talking about. But it's based on the uncle. So you might be saying, how the heck am I going to figure out what my uncle was supposed to take out? The guy was 73. I don't even know what his December 31st value of his IRA was the year before he died. I needed to look at the December 31st value of the previous years. I don't know how to get that. I don't know. I know my uncle was married, but I don't know the age of my aunt. And my aunt's life expectancy may be being used in his RMD calculations. I don't know this. I don't know what he was doing for his RMDs. Do you need to worry about any of this, Chris? The answer is yes. Nope, you were going to say, I don't think so. Well,
somebody's going to have to worry
about
it.
Somebody has to worry about
it. You personally may not have to worry about it because you can get some help on this.
Exactly. Technically speaking, this is all your responsibility.
Right.
However, your uncle's IRA custodian will most likely give you the information. It is not the custodian's responsibility to track down the beneficiaries and ensure you take the year of death RMD, because the custodian, first of all, by law, is given protection. Congress has given protections to the custodian. They don't have to determine this. It falls on the IRA owner. And I don't mean the deceased uncle who passed away. I mean the person who inherited, even though they're not technically the owner, they're the beneficiary. But it falls on their shoulders to figure this out. However, the custodian will give you all the help that they can give you. And what do I mean, all the help that they can? Well, they will be able to tell you, Chris, if the uncle took his RMD in the year he died. They'll also be able to tell you how the uncle was figuring it out. But what they won't be able to tell you is if the uncle ever took a larger RMD from another IRA at a different custodian that would have satisfied the RMD from that IRA. So even though the custodian may say, hey, they never took it, you need to, they don't know if your uncle took it from other IRA accounts. So it's going to be very important you coordinate with other, say, beneficiaries of the estate. Maybe you inherited an IRA at Vanguard, but someone else inherited an IRA at Fidelity. And the Fidelity IRA, Chris, the custodian reports to the person who inherited that one, oh, the uncle took out more than they needed to take. He took out more than enough. Don't worry about it. You're covered. Well, it may not be. You have to really look at all of the picture. So if the Fidelity one did have more taken out, maybe enough was taken out to cover your RMD of the Vanguard one. But what if there still wasn't enough, Chris, between both IRAs, even though more was taken out of Fidelity and nothing was taken out of the Vanguard? It is quite possible, is it not, that still not enough was taken for both?
Certainly possible. Before we solve that, though, I do want to mention that taking out more than you were supposed to, there's no harm or penalty in that other than you're going to pay tax on it because it was recognized as income on your tax return. So don't think you're going to, if you are playing it safe and you distribute, even if he took his RMD from a different IRA, which is what Jim is talking about here, that you can satisfy the RMD for all your IRAs by taking it out of any of the IRAs. If he had done that, like Jim's example, if you didn't realize it, couldn't figure it out, never were notified, you can't get in contact with other beneficiaries who can share this information with you, if you take it out just to be safe, you're going to be safe. It's going to be fine. It's just going to be show up as a distribution from that account to you, which you inherited as the beneficiary. It'll just get reported as a distribution to you, and you'll have covered your bases just in case there was an unsatisfied RMD. But in Jim's last point here before I went on that tangent, what if there was some taken out of that other one? There's still a little bit left to be taken. My guess is his real question is, where does it have to be taken from, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where does it have to be taken from, Jim?
Any IRA.
Any old place. Any of the IRAs, not any old place, but all these different IRAs. The thing is, I guess it's, and we've talked about this before, it's almost like the beneficiaries need to come to some agreement. Otherwise, someone's going to be forced to take all of it out if they want to cover themselves. But it's didn't we talk about one time where as long as you took out your proportion, that the IRS would consider you have following the directions
that,
and wouldn't come after you?
Or
is
you
that
remember,
unsettled?
Well, that was unsettled.
Yeah.
And if you remember, there was a disagreement between myself and the Ed Slot Group. We talked about this on the podcast before, where if the RMD was satisfied from another IRA, would you have to, would, let's just say this, I have my example here with one beneficiary. Let's just say there were multiple beneficiaries. So here's Ed's latest take. I'm going to change the facts a little because we kind of went down a rabbit hole here. But let's just pretend there's more than one beneficiary on the Vanguard IRA now. Let's say there was two beneficiaries on the Vanguard IRA, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There is some ambiguity, is a good way of putting it, in the law and the interpretation of what to do in the year of death RMD if it was, quote unquote, satisfied elsewhere. Now, there can be two ways to satisfy it elsewhere. The example that Chris and I gave, before the uncle died, he took out more than enough from Fidelity that between the Fidelity and the Vanguard, and we're making these accounts up, but the Fidelity and Vanguard account, Chris, he took out more than enough from Fidelity to satisfy the Vanguard RMD. And now let's say there's two beneficiaries on the Vanguard IRA. Technically speaking, they don't need to take anything.
Right.
Now you might run into a problem with the custodian itself. Even though it's not their responsibility to check on it, some will force a year of death RMD if none was taken. And you may have to tell them before they send it, because once they send it, there ain't no way of getting it back in. But you may have to tell them ahead of time, the RMD has been satisfied. My uncle did not have all their money at Vanguard. Don't send anything. Vanguard might say, oh, we never send it anyways. I don't know what Vanguard does, so that's why I hate naming custodians. I don't know what they do personally. But I do know from experience, Chris, some custodians will just, oop, so-and-so died, no money was taken out, let's send the RMD. Others won't do a thing. But that's one way where the RMD could be satisfied from another account, so to speak. And I don't think there's any ambiguity in the rules there.
No, that's pretty straightforward.
That's straightforward.
Yeah. Other than the only difficulty would be if it hadn't fully satisfied, and then there's this argument between beneficiaries about who needs to take the rest of it. That complicates it a little bit. But if he's definitely taken it, satisfied it, no beneficiaries left over need to worry about taking an RMD if the uncle satisfied it prior to death.
Exactly. Now, let's change the facts a little. The uncle took out nothing. Nothing from Fidelity. Nothing from Vanguard. Okay? And we have two beneficiaries of the Vanguard, one in the Fidelity. Nothing was taken out, so there must be a year of death RMD taken. And let's just pretend, Chris, the year of death RMD was $50,000. I'm making that up, okay?
How about 60?
60? Okay. $60,000. Oh, you want to make this round? Okay.
I want to make it divisible by three.
And the person who inherited the Vanguard IRA, when they inherited it, took out $100,000.
Well, there's two people on Vanguard, remember.
Oh, Fidelity then. The Fidelity IRA. The person who inherited the Fidelity IRA really needed some cash.
Mm-hmm. Took out $100,000.
Took out $100,000. Because they inherited it.
Right.
Does the Vanguard IRA people have to pay anything?
That's where some of this ambiguity comes in, if I remember the story correctly.
Exactly.
And I think this is where you got into it with Ed Slott. It would appear that it's been satisfied, but there's not clarity in how this will be treated from the IRS, because there isn't necessarily the assumption that there's this portability of RMD, you know, from one that covers all, now that it's been essentially assigned to different beneficiaries. So I think the conclusion was, to be safe, if each took their proportional RMD, it's likely that the IRS would look upon them favorably. If they ultimately rule that everyone should have taken an RMD, and just because one of the three took excess doesn't mean the other two get off the hook. Isn't that not how we concluded that that would be the safe approach? But it didn't necessarily have to be that way, because the rules aren't specific enough to cover this.
Exactly. And Ed's opinion used to be, notice the operative word there, was prorated. So he would say, or used to feel, the RMD should be prorated amongst the three beneficiaries and each one take out $20,000 if the uncle should have taken out $60,000 and he didn't take out anything before he died, that each beneficiary should take out $20,000 to be safe. But recently, not this last meeting, but the meeting before, the in-person meeting, and I should have mentioned it on the radio, but I didn't. I don't think I did. He changed his tune, and he's starting to think it would be okay, even though there's still no direct guidance. If one beneficiary took out 100 in my example, or 60, and the RMD was 60, he feels that would satisfy it now. I've always felt that way. I don't know what the IRS would do, and honestly, I don't think they know what they would do.
Yeah, and you might be thinking, my gosh, this must happen regularly. Somebody must have run into this, but I think the reason we just haven't heard about it is it's very uncommon, because what happens most of the time with an IRA that is inherited by a non-spouse beneficiary? What do, Jim?
Probably close it.
They run and they take the money out. So obviously, if you take all the money out, that's going to satisfy the RMD. So all those cases are going to be of no concern whatsoever, because they've definitely satisfied any possible RMD. It's just these a set of beneficiaries, non-spouse beneficiaries, that might be wanting to leave the money in there, not take it, where they're only wanting to take out the minimum to satisfy the RMD rule, where this might come up. And I'm a little surprised somebody hasn't gotten some clarity on this yet, but maybe the IRS isn't even tracking this much. Maybe they aren't even, the reason why it hasn't come up and somebody would report being punished for not doing it correctly, which would obviously add clarity to this situation for us, is because this is, in the grand scheme of things, this just isn't something that the IRS is watching much. And nobody's been taken to task for doing it wrong and then let the rest of us know. You know, information travels amazingly fast and broadly now with the internet. You'd think someone who is punished under this would have leaked out and gotten to the all-knowing, all-seeing Ed Slott, since he's monitoring this stuff constantly, seemingly through all sources. But even he, if he'd gotten clarity, I'm sure he would have laid down the law and said, this is what the IRS said. There's a case where it happened, and this is how they treated it. Now we know how they're going to approach it. So far, no specific clarity on that. But I agree that if you honestly tried to do your best to follow the rule, the chances and take out what is fairly your portion of the RMD, if the others did not, I think you'll be pretty well protected. I just can't imagine if you were honestly trying to do the right thing and the IRS didn't say, oh, you were trying to manipulate this to get out of something. If you honestly took out what you believed to be your fair share of it, I think you're probably protected if the others don't do the same.
But here's how I would argue it to the IRS. Mm-hmm. The rule is the required minimum distribution of the decedent. Again, let's pretend it's $60,000. Let's pretend he had two IRAs, one at Fidelity, one at Vanguard. There was only one beneficiary on the Fidelity one, two on the Vanguard one. Okay. $60,000 has to come out. That's the rule. The year of death RMD has to come out. Yep. Payable to the beneficiaries, taxable to the beneficiaries. As soon as the Fidelity inheritor took $60,000 out, there is no more RMD.
That satisfies it, supposedly, yep.
That was how I would argue
it. And I think where this came up is people were maybe in a story we created, but obviously the twist on this is if we had these three beneficiaries and one of them was in a really, really low tax bracket, there would be some possibility for some collusion on some of this and say, oh, we don't want to take it out because we have really high-paying jobs. You, beneficiary who's still a college student or you know whatever the reason might be, you're in a really low tax bracket or you're between jobs.
You take it out.
You take it all out and we'll just kind of handle it behind the scenes and we'll pay the taxes on it, but at your rate because it's so much lower. That feels like the IRS wouldn't want that to happen. But I agree with Jim that if it gets taken out, regardless of where it comes from, it would be hard for the IRS to argue it wasn't taken. It was taken. It may not have been at the tax rates that the IRS wishes it had been recognized, but that's not what they're in the business of doing. They're in business of enforcing the rules, and the rule simply says it must be taken. It doesn't say must be taken from the highest marginal tax bracket beneficiary, any of that. It's just it must be taken.
Doesn't even say prorated amongst beneficiaries. And that would change. If they just added that
in. If they said
in,
that, we'd know.
But because it's not there and it doesn't say prorated, it doesn't mean non-pro-rata is wrong.
Right.
So that's why I've always felt, and
Ed hasn't come fully around to your way of thinking yet?
On two meetings ago, so I think that was, where the heck were we? I can't even remember anymore. But anyways, it was an in-person meeting, and he's starting to come around to the ladder that he feels it would be okay that each beneficiary doesn't have to take it pro-rata. However, he also said there's still no guidance. And it's not because he listens to this podcast, and it's certainly not because he admires my opinion. I just think he might be thinking of it differently like I'm thinking of it differently.
Yeah, and my comment before about the pro rata was more from the opposite, not that one person took out a bunch and therefore satisfying for all three. What if the three were bickering and no one wanted to take it? And so two refused to take it, saying, no, you've got to take it all for various reasons. There's some other thing going on with the estate, and they think it's fair for one of the three to take it all out. So two refuse. I don't think the third one should feel compelled to take the whole thing out. I think the third one, if they took their pro rata amount and then documented all that, and if the IRS came down on them for not taking the RMD, if that were to happen, although I've never heard of it happening, but if that were to happen, I think the person who took the pro rata amount tried to do the right thing. I don't think they should be bullied, although it is possible the IRS would say, well, all three of you are at fault. it didn't get taken, all three of you are punished. The fact that you tried to do the right thing, beneficiary A, by taking your 20,000 out, that still doesn't protect you. The 60 wasn't taken, all of you are going to be on the hook with penalties on the 40 grand that should have been taken and wasn't. It could possibly go that way as well. But I think they tend, when things are a bit ambiguous and the rules aren't super clear, that if you tried to do the right thing, they generally are somewhat lenient. That's kind of a wishy-washy way of saying it. But the best protection, of course, is one of them to step up and take the whole 60. Then I think everybody's protected. But kind of an interesting... You think with all the pages of the rules that every possible situation would be covered. It's not. Thus, the topics for a lot of these shows. And the topics exactly. for the Ed Slott program, too.
Okay, a couple of other things about the year of death RMD. There is none if it's a Roth IRA you inherit. Why is that, Chris?
Because Roth IRAs have no RMDs for the original account owner. So there would be no RMD that they should have taken. The RMD would apply for the beneficiary, and the beneficiary's RMDs start later.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay, if the year of RMD, year of death RMD, if the year of death RMD is missed, there is still a 50% penalty tax on it. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty steep penalty. However, you can file Form 5329. Maybe we'll do another show because it's been a very long time, an EDU show on how to complete Form 5329. But you would complete Form 5329, kind of the mea culpa form, where you admit you screwed up with a retirement account and you owe penalties and taxes. And you can request, as Chris puts it, requesting compassion. You can request compassion on that form, fill it in, and send it into the IRS and say, hey, I was late. Please don't charge me a 50% penalty tax. And there are ways to fix it. We'll do a whole EDU show someday. We did one in the past, so I don't know if it's still on as a podcast, but how to file Form 5329. But do remember, if you miss, if the beneficiaries miss the year of death penalty, excuse me, the year of death RMD, there will be a 50% penalty tax. So do keep that in mind. Spouses are not exempt from the year of death RMD.
Right.
Now, that one surprises a lot of people.
Right, because they're thinking a younger spouse hasn't reached RMD age yet. They don't have to take an RMD. Wrong.
And because a spouse can treat an inherited IRA as their own, unlike a non-spouse beneficiary, because they can treat it as their own, a lot of people think, mm-hmm. oh, well, they could just treat it as if it's their own, and they don't have to take the RMD. Yeah. Nope. Year of death RMD must be taken by the spouse. But the spouse gets special rules. And one is she or he, depending on who's dead, can take the year of death RMD from their own IRA.
That's an interesting fun fact. And the reason why the spouse still owes it, even though they may not have their own RMDs, is technically the RMD for the year is due January 1st. January 1st every year, when it's a year of RMDs happening, that's when it's due. They give you till the end of the year to satisfy it. So they give you kind of a grace period. So, but the moment you reach that next year, if it's a year you owe an RMD, you owe it, whether you die that year or not. When you die, during the grace period, if you will, you've got to the end of the year to actually take it. You were still on the hook for taking it. That's why the spouse has to go ahead and take that RMD when the person, their spouse who passed away, had not taken an RMD that was otherwise due in that year of death. That's the reasoning. It's some people think it's not due, it's not really owed until the end of the year. It's true, but they've billed it to you on January 1st. There's just an outstanding bill and they give you 365 days to pay it. If you die before paying it, your beneficiary has to take care of it for you, whether it's your spouse or not.
Exactly. So do keep in mind the spouse can take it from their own IRA because the spouse is allowed to treat an inherited IRA as their own RIA. Not RIA. IAR. No.
This is RIA. IRA.
So what am I saying?
RIA.
I'm saying RIA?
Just recently you started doing that. Yeah, just this in the last couple sentences.
Holy
It's the same three letters. IAR, RIA, and IRA.
Don't start confusing me here.
That's the financial services industry for you, right? We've got three completely different things. Well, two that are somewhat
related.
These
are acronyms in our industry. Yeah. Registered investment advisor representative, and individual retirement arrangement.
Yep.
IRA, RIA, IAR. Yeah. And yours truly is just muffing it all up. Yeah. Let me get back to this so I don't confuse people. Hate to confuse people. Spouses must take the year of death RMD for their deceased spouse. Only spouses are allowed to treat the inherited IRA as their own. And if they elect to treat it as their own, or elect to transfer it into their own IRA, one or the other, then they can satisfy the RMD from their own IRA. They don't necessarily have to take it from the decedents. But if they stay for some bizarre reason, Chris, as a beneficiary and not treating it as their own, then they would have to take the year of death RMD from the decedent's IRA.
Yeah, that's a weird one. Wouldn't apply to many people, but in the
because most
rare
spouses
case,
will treat it as theirs.
Yeah.
Now, do keep one thing in mind, though. Only spouses are allowed to transfer an inherited IRA as an indirect rollover, often known as a 60-day rollover. He or she could close the IRA, take the entire, let's just say they inherited $1 million. They can get it into their own IRA a few ways. They can transfer it directly from custodian to the same custodian or a different one, back to my Fidelity and Vanguard. Let's say the person at Fidelity who inherited it was the spouse, and she is thinking, wow, I want to be where my other family members are at Vanguard. I'm going to move this inherited IRA at Fidelity to my own IRA at Vanguard. And she could. And she can do it as a direct transfer. And she can satisfy the RMD from that IRA or her own that she may have somewhere else. However, a spouse, and only a spouse, Chris, is allowed. She could have closed that Fidelity IRA. Took the, I don't know how much money is in it, did I say?
No.
All right, let's just say it's $1 million in it. Took the $1 million out, done something with it if she wanted. We jokingly said she could get dollar bills and frolic naked in them. We've said that before. And as long as by day 60, she puts it back into an IRA in her name, she's okay. But let me ask you, Chris, and this could be a trick question. How much money on a indirect rollover? She took $1 million out. She frolicked nude in it for 58 days. On the 59th day, she waltzes down to the local Vanguard office, and she says, I'm going to put this $1 million into this IRA. How much is she allowed to put into that IRA?
What do you mean it's a trick question? Is the spouse, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much is she allowed to put in?
Yep. How much can she put in? She took $1 million out. Because that's how much she inherited. She's the only one that's allowed. Only a spouse is allowed to do an indirect rollover, otherwise known as a 60-day rollover, of an inherited IRA. So she takes the $1 million out. She's got $1 million, $1 bills, frolics around in them. Now she's waltzing in on day 58. She's still got 2 days to get that money in. And how much can she put into the IRA?
Up to $1 million.
Do you have your little sound effect of clapping?
Oh.
Don't play it. Play the other one.
This one? What am I missing here?
there is still an RMD. Can RMDs be rolled over?
Oh, I see what happened.
Mm-hmm.
If she'd already taken the RMD from her original one before she frolicked about in it, but if she hasn't taken it yet, she has
RMDs
to leave it out.
RMDs can never be rolled over.
Yeah. I was just...
That's an important piece.
I know. The order,
I gave you a hint. I said it's a trick question.
The order in my mind of things happening wasn't following the same
path. All right, let's put in English because our listeners don't get the joke between us. Okay, as we've said many times on this show before, listeners, RMDs cannot
ever
be rolled over.
Yeah.
Here's a case where we said the year of death RMD hasn't been taken yet.
Well, we have to assume that she hasn't taken
anything
either. So neither her or her deceased spouse has taken anything out yet.
Right.
He dies. She inherits
$1 million.
Takes out the $1 million.
Let's just say $60,000 was the amount that...
That was the RMD that wasn't taken.
When she finishes frolicking and she's going to now go to... I was going to say Schwab. Goes to... Where's she going?
Vanguard.
She can only put in...
$940,000. Yeah, because of that million, the first 60 was considered RMD, for those of you following along at home. And since that first 60 was classified to the IRS, in the IRS's eyes, as RMD, it cannot be rolled over and put back in, whether you're the spouse or not. You couldn't have done it anyway if you're a non-spouse. There's no rolling over if a non-spouse IRA.
Yeah, if the brother... wanted to frolic naked in his million.
Then he's got to keep it all out.
Right.
Yeah, he's keeping it and frolicking.
That was an expensive frolic.
Right.
But only a spouse can roll over. Now, you might be saying, but Jim, you said she could have transferred the million into her own IRA and then satisfied the RMD from a different IRA that she owns.
True.
Absolutely, because when you do a direct transfer, the IRS isn't considering a RMD being withdrawn yet.
There's no distribution happening there because, remember, all your IRAs are considered one
big
pot.
IRA.
Just because you think there's some of it at Fidelity and Vanguard, that's just one. They just happen to have the names on them inside that bucket. It's all in one big IRA bucket. The IRS doesn't care if you're moving it around in the bucket. Where they care about it is if you take it out of the bucket and then try to put it back in, that's a whole different story. Now you've taken a distribution, and if you haven't yet taken the RMD, they're counting, in this case, 60 grand as the RMD. That can never go back into that bucket, no matter who you are.
Okay. All right. I think that was all.
Somebody's probably screaming out there too that since we're talking about this in 2020, since there are no RMDs this year, what if someone passes away this year? I know the answer.
I'm just bringing it up
because I bet there's someone out there thinking, wait a minute, we're in 2020. Aren't they going to talk about the fact that there's no RMDs?
Then none have to be taken.
Exactly. So just because they die doesn't mean they don't get the benefits of the CARES Act, which allows you to not take an RMD this year. So both you, the deceased, and any of your beneficiaries that receive your inherited IRA, if you were to pass away here in 2020, neither of you would have to take an RMD this year as a year of death RMD. So if you were thinking that, hopefully we just answered that.
Okay. Another thing, and this is very, very rare that this might happen, but I feel I would mention it. Disclaiming is still allowed if an RMD is taken. What does that mean in English, folks?
That's an interesting one.
Disclaiming is actually an estate planning strategy. It's where you would sometimes, it's called disclaiming planning. It's where you might name someone, Chris, as primary beneficiary and a few other people as contingent beneficiaries. And you're unsure, you would like the contingents to get the asset.
Right.
But you're just unsure they're going to be ready or it makes sense or for a variety of reasons, you're just like, gosh, I don't know if I want to give it to them or not. Right. Now, you could use a trust, but as we've said many a times, trust adds complexity and difficulty. And well, another quicker way of doing it is disclaiming. So you could have a situation where a spouse, the wife, let's just say the wife, is going to inherit the IRA. Two kids are going to be named as contingent. The husband is saying to the wife, look, really like the kids to have it, but only if you don't need it. And only if they do really good in school like I told them I wanted them to.
Right.
And if they don't, I want you to keep this money and they'll get it at your passing.
Yeah.
Now, a trust could accomplish that, but it adds complexity, might be difficult, and for a variety of reasons. So the husband and wife make a deal, and the wife says, okay, I talked to our estate planning attorney. There's this thing called disclaiming. I, meaning the wife, I have 9 months after your death to make up my mind if I want this, or if I want to leave it to the next beneficiaries in line. She can't pick who right. she wants.
Right.
They have to be named on the IRA as contingent beneficiaries. Right. And she can't choose, oh, I want this contingent beneficiary to get it and not that
Her one. Only choice is stepping back away and let it pass past her.
Right.
Even though what Jim just started this with, though, she might take the date of the year of death RMD.
Well, that's where the problem comes in yeah. because disclaiming planning specifically says in the tax code, you cannot take any distributions or receive anything of value from the account and later decide disclaim. To disclaim.
Right. If you start to take it, you've stepped in and you said,
you
yeah,
take
I'm
a dollar out.
Here. Right.
You're
right.
done. You can't disclaim. So you can't really do anything until you make up that mind. However, we just said, did we ever say when the year of death RMD is due? It's due by December 31st of the year of death. But you have 9 months
to disclaim.
Right. What if the guy dies in December 1st? Now the wife only has 31 days to figure this out because she must take the year of death distribution if the husband didn't. And let's pretend to keep things simple in my example. He didn't. She's got 9 months to make up her mind. So she's got till, what is that, August of next year to make up her mind if she wants to disclaim, but only 31 days to take the RMD. What happens?
Well, because it's actually his distribution that's happening, they don't count that as her dipping into it. So she still retains that 9 months to disclaim, even if she follows the rules and takes out that RMD before the end of the year, which she's required to do. So they do let you take that out. It still gets reported on her tax return, which actually that year would still be a joint tax return. So it's not as complicated as a non-spouse beneficiary. But nevertheless, you'd think that her dipping in there and taking it out would stop the disclaimer clock and say, no, we're not disclaiming. And no, it does not. She can keep that nine-month period and still step out of the way, which is what happens with the disclaimer. She essentially pretends like they treat it as if she had died, that she wasn't available as the primary beneficiary. They then look on the beneficiary designation form and who's next in line, and they send it to them. The person who died or disclaimed, they treat them the same way. Essentially, it's all out of the way, and then the custodian handles the transfer, retitling, all of that stuff as if the contingent beneficiaries, it went directly to them. Even though she dipped her hand in there and took that RMD in Jim's example.
Okay. There is a little bit of clarity I probably should have added because there's the final one when a charity is beneficiary. I wanted to throw that out there. So let's look at the last example that I have here from when Ed Slott reviewed all this with us during our last discussion. And it has to do with aggregation. And remember, we were trying to talk about what if we had three beneficiaries and one took it all? Does it satisfy it for the others? The answer is clearly yes, as we have said. But, and one thing I didn't make clear, and probably in the example we gave, it may not quite work out that way then. The IRAs must be the exact kind, so both IRAs. In other words, you can't aggregate a 401k with an IRA, so I want to make sure people understand that. We never mentioned 401ks. So if the IRAs are the same, so IRAs, not an IRA, a 401k, and a 403b, sounds like a bad joke. An IRA, a 403, and a 403b walked into a bar. It can't be that. And in our example, or my example, it wasn't that. It was two IRAs. But I said we had one beneficiary who inherited the Fidelity and two beneficiaries inherited the Vanguard. That cannot be aggregated. Only if all three beneficiaries were named on each IRA. That I wanted to make sure people understand. And I don't think I made that clear.
No, the way we originally started the story, which was kind of spontaneous, each right. was directly named as a single beneficiary.
Correct.
The Vanguard had the two on it, but the Fidelity had just one person listed.
So Ed
on there.
Makes
so
it
that,
perfectly
that is a little
clear.
Wrinkle, yeah.
The IRA must be the same type, which again, IRA, IRA, not IRA, 401k, 403b. So two IRAs or more, and inherited by the same beneficiaries from the same owner. So with the Fidelity just going to one and the Vanguard going to two, it would not work. But if one of the two Vanguard beneficiaries took out more than enough, it would help that Vanguard beneficiary, but not the Fidelity.
Yeah, usually when we tell this story, it's just one IRA with right. many beneficiaries, so they're all named on there, so this isn't an issue. But yeah, I didn't pick up on that when you described the story either.
I didn't, and I but did that, now,
yeah,
and
yeah,
I want to make yeah. sure, because the final element I want to review is what happens if there is a charity in all this. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized, oh, wait a minute, the example we gave isn't quite right. So I do apologize for that, folks. Chris and I do this on the fly. We're talking off the top of our heads. And you can aggregate year of death RMDs. But again, there has to be the same beneficiary. So if all three were named on Fidelity and all three named on Vanguard, and one of the three took out more than enough from one of the IRAs, the other two could aggregate. Ed gives the example, though, of a charity. You throw a charity in, and he says, what if you had one woman, or he said a woman, could be a man, one person dies at age 82, Chris, mm-hmm. and left three IRAs to their child. Mm-hmm. One child. Let's make this easy. I don't mm-hmm. want to make multiple children. So two of the IRAs went to the child. One of the IRAs went to a charity. We see that all the time. Mm-hmm. People want to keep this easy. I'm going to name this one to the charity, these two to my child. Let's just say that, again, there was $300,000 in each one. I'm just making these numbers up. And a $100,000 RMD was owed because the person died very old. So $100,000 had to come out. But the charity does what with their $300,000?
Well, the charity oftentimes will just take it and immediately liquidate it because there's no tax implications for them. They owe no taxes. They don't have to worry about recognizing a bunch of income. They'll just take it out and put it in their operating fund because they've got things to go spend money on that's part of their charity. And I see where you're going with, where Ed's going with this. The child is thinking, oh, the RMD has now been satisfied because they took out the $300,000. So that was well in excess of the $100,000 year of death RMD that's owed. I'm free and clear. And guess what?
No.
Exactly.
Because the third IRA yeah. was just the charity.
It was not in the same exact beneficiary.
Even
listing.
Though, and I disagree with this. I mean, it's the way it is. I just don't think
You don't think it should work like
this? It should work this way because the IRS considers all your IRAs to be what, Chris?
One big IRA.
One big IRA. Mm-hmm. But here they're clearly saying no. It's not one big IRA. So Ed made clear to us that if the beneficiaries are different, aggregation isn't going to work. But if the beneficiaries are the same and the decedent is the same, you can't satisfy an inherited IRA of the father by taking it out of a inherited IRA from the mother. Has to be the same decedent, same account type, IRA, same beneficiaries, if all of that is the same. So if the charity was named, Chris, on the IRA, the daughter gets two-thirds, the charity gets one-third. One-third of the IRA happened to be $300,000, and the required distribution was just $100,000, they would be covered because they're all named on the IRA. But when they were separate beneficiaries, it wouldn't work. So the example I gave earlier, and I wanted to add clarity to that before we hung up and we'd have to do a show correcting it, because I was making this on the fly, I misspoke. On that, I can't even remember the example, but I remember I had the Fidelity with one and the
Vanguard
with two.
Yep.
That wouldn't work. It would work if all three of them were named. That's why you mostly see children all being named on each account oftentimes, but not all the time. Some parents like to keep it separate. And if that's the case, there's no problem keeping it separate. It's just that the children can't say, oh, this guy took it all out. The IRAs are one big IRA. They do consider it one big IRA, but for some bizarre reason, they have a rule. All the beneficiaries, though, need to be identical.
Got it.
And why I disagree with it, though, Chris, is the law is the law. The IRS considers all the IRAs one big IRA, and the law says the RMD for that one big IRA has to be satisfied. But they have that silly little part in there that all three beneficiaries must be the same. And IRAs will be reported, IRAs. RMDs, folks, just so you know, will be reported on Form 1099-R, just like everything. However, make sure it's code 4 on the 1099. That means it's a date of death distribution. Do keep that in mind, except for spouses. Spouses who treat the IRA as their own, you will have a code 7 normal distribution, especially if you satisfy the RMD by taking it out of your own as a normal distribution. So do keep that in mind. But beneficiaries will get the code 4, which is a death distribution due to death.
Got it.
And I think that's how the IRS can track that the RMDs are actually taken, because they're looking for the code 4. So in the case where one beneficiary takes it all out, the IRS sees a 1099 code 4 with more than enough mm-hmm. money to cover the RMD, and I think they're satisfied with that.
I think so. Well, that brings us to an end. We went a little long. I need to get home.
Oh, okay. I'm all set. Thank you, folks, for listening. Sorry again for the little confusion on the end there. I'm glad I picked up on it on the very, very end, but wanted to add that clarity there.
Okay. Well, thanks again, everybody, for listening to our podcast or podcasts, if you listen to our Q&A show as well. This brings us to the end of an EDU show. If you want more information about us, how to contact us, how to send in a question for us to answer on the Q&A show, best way to do that is on the website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. On that same website, you can learn a little bit more about us, exactly what we do, the services that we provide, which are all services surrounding this great, big, wonderful world that we call retirement planning, which is our focus. Everything that you might want to know about us pretty much is on that website. So again, that's jimhelps.com. And thanks again, and we'll be with you next week with a brand new show.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.